it's likely that there's something a contractor or a freelancer can do better than anyone in the company.
Why?
Because the company's just not good at that yet.
You're listening to the world's best business podcast with Steli Efti and Heaton Shaw, who insisted on having Steli's name mentioned first, despite him having more Twitter followers. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to get shit done, stop everything else and focus on this podcast for the next 20 minutes. Then go back to work and crush it.
All right. So today we're going to talk about how to hire and work with freelancers, contractors, people that are not full-time members of your company.
That's right.
How many freelancers have you hired in your career?
Probably close to 1,000 in the last 12 years.
All right. Holy Wait, shit.
12? Yeah, 12 years.
12 years. All right. So you might know a thing or two about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many freelancers or contractors I've hired. Probably it's more in the like 50
sure.
or so range. Yeah. But usually with somebody else in my team dealing with it. So I personally have very little experience finding the freelancer or contractor and working with them.
Yeah.
Usually somebody else in the company would do that. So, and this points to probably one of my number one challenges why I haven't done it as much. And I'm curious about this is working with people in a way that is less committed, right? Which means I don't know them as well. I don't care about them maybe as much. I don't invest in them as much. And they feel the same way about me. And which it's kind of like the analogy between like marriage or a serious relationship versus like you're just like dating or having one night stands, right? You're just getting to something that both parties want and then you move on.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me to get excited about a really or not feel like I'm wasting my time if I'm investing time in that. How do you feel about like making this work for your company when you work with people that are not fully committed to your company? And that's fine.
Sure. They're still fully committed to something.
Yeah.
They could be fully committed to their craft or the work they do, or they could just simply be fully committed to having a life where they're not tied down to any one company. So really, I mean, I think that's a deeper later topic once you find people, but like in general, like there are people that don't want to be full-time. And one thing I would say is like in any company, anyone, even a large one like Google, it's likely that there's something a contractor or a freelancer can do better than anyone in the company.
Why?
Because the company's just not good at that yet.
Okay.
It's like for example, right? Okay. So in your company today, there's probably a bunch of stuff you guys aren't good at.
Yeah.
Right? And there's somebody out there that can help you do that.
Yep.
And if that's an important thing for you to do, you should find that somebody. And that somebody might not be a full-time hire. In fact, a full-time hire might take forever in some of these roles.
Yeah.
Right? And it's much easier to find a freelancer. For example, between 99designs, Dribbble, Elance, and I guess now they call it Upwork, right? Another one. And probably the long tail of these sites where literally they have human beings for sale.
Yeah.
Right? They have profiles. It's like human beings. You can buy them, right?
You can buy them
for some amount of time, right?
Yeah.
That's really what it is. I think the proliferation of that has made it easy to find great people that are contractors or freelancers.
All right. So let's talk about
that. That's a huge thing.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Has it really? So is the greatest I totally subscribe that there's a slice of great talent that wants a specific type of lifestyle that fits into the freelancer and contractor work.
Yeah.
But I would also venture to say that another big part of that community or audience has difficulties. I don't know. In some cases, it's an arbitrage between different like markets and places in the world.
Yeah.
Right. You find great talent somewhere.
Yeah.
It's cheaper than here.
But hang on, let me stop you. You're overthinking it.
All right.
It's very simple. You need work done. There's people out there to do it. How do you get them to do it and get the best work out of them?
Right.
That's the bottom line.
How do you find the great people? Do you literally go to these places?
Before these sites existed, because I used to find people before this that we used to, we had to go hunt them down.
Where?
We had to go do Google searches. We had to go search Blogger. We had to go like find where they're blogging, find where they hang out. We had to go find their portfolios. Like this was not easy.
Yeah.
Right? Now it's much easier. Now, what we used to do though is I'm going to pick a specific one. So for design, right? Any kind of design, infographics all the way to user interface, right? That kind of covers it all basically, or even posters and graphic design. We used to go look at the CSS galleries. Do you know what those are?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is when CSS and HTML was like hot.
Yeah.
Because before that, we used Flash to do crazy shit on websites, right? And so once it started getting hot, I'm guessing this is 05, 06, there's a lot of CSS galleries. Well, guess what? About 40 to 50% of the sites they profile at the CSS galleries, it was basically just sites that would show off other sites that people have created. So 40 to 50% of them were actually freelancers that built really cool sites, right? That want that would get business because they got on there. So then we would just find people that way.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a deliberate marketplace. It wasn't a place where I actually go and can hire somebody, right? So now because of, let's just take Dribbble, right? Let's say you mentioned this in some other podcast, but infographics, you guys don't do them, right? Yeah. Do you have $2,500 to spend just to see and find somebody?
Yeah.
Great. So what I would do is I would take a budget. Let's say it's $2,500, right? Maybe it needs to be more. I don't know, right? I don't know what infographics cost right now, but even at that budget, it would work. And then I would divide it by five. So that's $500 each. And I would basically give five people the same task for $500. And each person would get the $500. And then I would find everything out. I would know the quality of the work, how they communicate, and anything else I might want to know about them, even how they take the input I give them, which might be the same input I'd give someone on the internal team to do something. And then I'd have these five different versions of this process done based on these people that I hired. And from there, I've always found at least one that I can rely on.
Okay. So have you built relationship with some of these? I'm assuming some of these freelancers or contractors turn into full-time eventually.
Yeah.
Some of them might have been lifelong freelancers that you work with. Like, what was the relationship over the thousand people that you work with?
And there's freelancers, and then there's also services businesses. And for me, for me, they end up being one and the same.
Okay.
Just because I generally treat them very similar.
Okay.
Right? Services businesses cost more because usually there's a whole team behind it, right?
Mm-hmm.
While freelancers are generally less expensive.
Yes.
Skill set, obviously, they could be more even, but in general, on average. So, I mean, I think one of the ways I think about it is, even if I'm looking for a full-time hire, I still need to have some pool of people I can find, right? So that's more of a recruiting task, right? So at Kissmetrics, actually, when we knew we wanted to do infographics, we actually did this exact process. We took five, and we spent $500 each, and we went on Dribbble, and we basically found one person. That person is actually a full-time team member at the company now.
Hmm.
But he was a freelancer for 18 months.
Okay.
And after a while, we actually brought him on at 40 hours a week, almost pretty much full time. But he had a criteria, right? He didn't live where we were mostly, even though we were distributed. And he really didn't want a job like that. He just wanted flexibility of time. So what actually ended up happening in that specific case is the freelancing, which was one $500 infographic, turned into hourly work for him, which turned into a full-time job.
Mm.
But the way that progressed was it helped us understand what his needs were. So we figured out he wanted to, in the middle of the day, go and do whatever he wanted to do. We don't really care as long as he's working and getting stuff done.
Right.
Right. So once we realized that was his reasoning for not going full time, we're like, oh, we'll give you that opportunity and you could be full time.
Yeah.
Right. So it worked out. So I think it's easier than ever now to do those five experiments, right? Or five examples with five different people in almost any category, even programming, and then figure out whether you like working with a person or not.
Yeah.
So in a way, like, we've adopted that tactic even for hiring. Like, if we have a bunch of candidates, we're really excited about two or three of them, we'll give them a project to do. We might even pay them for the project, right? And in that process, we'll learn everything about how it actually is like to work with this person.
Yeah.
So it's something we've used commonly now.
I mean, this is an important tactic. I couldn't agree more with it. Like, never just get married immediately. Just date a little bit or move in together.
That's right. Yeah.
So the metaphor here is you do some work.
Go on a few dates.
Yeah. Do some work, right?
Yeah,
even if it's somebody that's, it's a support hire or salesperson.
Yeah.
Yeah. A month, or 2 weeks. Come here and do some sales with us. Get paid.
Or even give them, if you want to do it faster, you can even do it faster than that amount of time. You can give them example scenarios and see how they respond. So, for example, in support, whether it's a freelancer or even someone full-time, the example work I'd give them is I'd actually give them my hardest support case and tell them they have an hour to respond or 30 minutes and literally hand it to them as if they don't know anything, right? Because there's FAQs, help stuff on your site. And commonly someone in support will get questions they don't know how to answer.
Yes.
So you could just give them a sample scenario, give it to five different candidates and literally send it to them and say you have an hour.
Right. So how do you deal with certain barriers, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times you might get great talent somewhere where English is not that great. So there might be some communication barrier, although the quality of work is great.
Yeah.
It might take more time or it might slow the process down or create sometimes bad work just because there was communication breakdowns. How do you think about that? Do you care about it? Is that a requirement? You need to be great at English?
Yeah.
Or
how do you think about that? So to me, nothing's a requirement. The reason is I'm pretty sure if someone's quality of work is high, all the other problems can be solved. But you need to learn what they are. So I think the brilliance of this process is you get to learn it cheap and fast.
Right.
Like you even said 2 weeks and a month, that's too long for me for anything like this, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to know within a few days. ideally, or even a few hours. So I think when you have these barriers like that, it's just about identifying whether it's a actual communication problem and an actual problem the other side actually has that they can't resolve, or there are ways around it. For example, if it's a design one and there's a communication barrier in terms of language, even written language, then visually communicate it. Cross out shit on the designs, right?
Yeah.
Write different shit. Give them the copy first so they don't have to think about it, right? But if you do this process, you'll know exactly where the holes are, and you won't have invested thousands of dollars to hire the person full time, or even thousands of dollars on a big project with the person. Just do something small and see if like the way they work works for you, or the quality of their work you like. So then you'll figure out how to work with them.
Do you think that generally startups are bad at working with freelancers and contractors because they always want to just hire people internally?
I think startups shun freelancers and contractors because they want internal dedicated people.
Yes.
But like I said earlier, even for a company like Google that has, I don't know, 100,000 employees. I don't remember how many team members, right?
Many,
right? There's people out there.
By the way, you mean Alphabet, maybe.
Yeah, Alphabet, my bad. Alphabet. Sorry, Alphabet. They just changed their name.
Yeah.
Well, they did more than that.
Yeah.
But the point is that, like, I think startups should think about it. I mean, look, if you're self-funded, you're probably going to go a contractor route anyways.
Yes.
Right? Because you're self-funded and you're trying to keep – you don't want to have a commitment to anybody unless you're ready to support that family or that person or whatever, right? So I think if a self-funded company is thinking like they need full-time people, they're wrong for sure.
Right.
Right? Because they just can't support it.
And, yeah.
And so even in my self-funded companies, a lot of our work is contracted out, and we've had the same contractors for years.
Yeah.
Could be services businesses or freelancers, and it's all good.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just, you know, I know you mentioned earlier about, oh, you know, the stickiness of that type of person and all that. It's just really understanding if that person's ever going to be a full-time person or not. And if you understand that, then you know that if you like them, you want to grab them before anyone else does.
Yeah.
Right. But if they're not, then you just work into that. Right.
Yeah.
What are problems freelancers have? Let's talk about the other side real quick.
Yeah.
One, they don't get paid on time. Two, they might do work they don't get paid for because they don't know they should be asking for payment upfront, at least a percentage of it.
Yeah.
So they learn all this. Right. Three, they want consistency. So one of their biggest problems is always trying to find new work.
Yeah.
So if you find someone you like, you can pretty much guarantee them work to some extent. And if you do that, they're going to stay with you.
Yeah.
And if you even help them build their business, they're going to stay with you. So people that I think are awesome, the interesting thing is they don't generally always have capacity, right? So I won't necessarily give them more business. But if I understand their capacity, understand how much I can give them, I will give them more work from other people just so that they stay freelancing and they don't look for work, and I help them get more work.
Right.
And then who do they love more?
How do you find these things out? Do you spend time separated away from the actual work to be like, hey, how is life? What are you looking for? Yeah. How do you find out all these things? How do you build the relationship with them?
So the basis of a services or a freelancer is pretty simple, the basic of it. You pay them money, they do great work. If they don't do great work, you don't even bother going into these areas. So for me, it's first, do I want to work with them?
Yes.
Then it's just a conversation of, oh, hey, let's do more together.
Yeah.
So after that $500 each and I figure out the one, I just have a conversation, a quick one about, hey, I want to do more with you. What does that look like? And then I'll learn whether they want full-time or not. I'll learn what their capacity is, and I'll learn how much other business they already have. And based on that, I can determine what we should do as a company with that freelancer or that person.
Yeah. All right. What about price? Like a lot of people think of using freelancers as a cost-saving tactic, right? It didn't sound like that's your number one goal when you work with freelancers. It's more about speed than about saving money. Like how do you think about that? Like when you have multiple – and you, even your example of like you take – you know, 2.5 K, you 500, didn't seem like you're that concerned about like choosing the cheapest or going for the most expensive ones. Do you have any bias towards that?
If you think about the cost on the other side, so the alternative, the 2,500 is super cheap. So if you think about the alternative of recruiting costs or the alternative of like somebody on your team doing it, right? It just starts looking cheap the way that I'm discussing, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about. But ultimately, in terms of price, it really boils down to the work that you're trying to get done. So if you're price sensitive, that's cool. Your pool of those five, it might be $500 and it might be $100 each. That's okay, right? But the best process is when you find a cohort or a group of people that you can give the same project to.
Yeah.
So it's apples to apples. I don't care how much you pay.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just a factor of the group of people you choose to do this experiment with. I've even done things where some people are like 200, other people are like 500. That's okay. That helps me gauge it. So I sort of try to eliminate this issue of cost by just basing it on what my budget is for that thing and then starting out like that.
And also one important thing here, and we talked about it, but I want to highlight it again, is that you never give them the ultimate work you want to give them. You give them something they can do very fast so you can judge based on quality of work who you really want to work with. Because a lot of times people would choose freelancers by putting out the real project. Like, I want somebody to build my social network. Oh, yeah.